Ed Kraft and Rizzo presenting The Truth.
Listening to us yet? Yeah, there you are. We're listening. You're listening to us on Dread Radio. I'm sorry. I've been at work all day. I'm kind of wound up. It's me, Reepso, with Ed Kraft. How you doing, Ed?
Great. How you doing, Reep?
I'm okay. I gotta drink some more, though. I haven't had time to drink enough today yet.
Sounds like our intro is still playing back on us there. I'm hearing the feedback. I guess that would help if I would turn off my
Yeah, it would help if you turned off the encoder or the feed.
Yeah,
you don't have to listen to the show, Ed. You're part of it.
I'll tell you, it's been one of those days. I had to drive to the city today, so what does that tell you?
Hey, did you hear about that plane crash in Palo Alto?
But yeah, I was sitting there watching. I was sitting down at the VA when I was sitting there watching it. It's like, wow. Thank God I didn't have to go to Palo Alto. I went down to San Francisco today.
No one on the ground got hurt?
Yeah, I was amazed. One of the witnesses called in, and she was in the house right smack dab in the middle. And it missed her and hit the her next door neighbors on both sides.
Lit some cars on fire.
Yeah.
Knocked out the main power lines to the city. The city's been without, and Stanford Hospital hasn't been able to do any operations today. Lucile Packard Hospital's closed up.
Yeah, it's just amazed at, you know, how one little plane could do so much damage and still keep it so isolated at the same time. It's amazing.
Killed the three people on the plane, though.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. But, you know, that kind of par for the course. I mean, one of the small, what's it, two engine? I think it was a twin engine.
Yeah, twin engine, yeah.
So, and it seems to be a lot more of those lately. The twin engines are dropping out of the sky lately. I don't think I'd get in one anymore. I used to not mind it. My cousin flies one out of Fresno, but I don't think I'd get in one anymore. For some reason, they just don't seem safe. I think they're,
you know,
just like other things, they're aging fleets.
Yeah, like being a mechanic, you know? You've got to accept the fact that sometimes things just effing break, no matter how well you take care of them, you know?
Yeah. Oh, one more thing. Did you check out the news about King Tut?
Yeah, I saw that, the DNA thing.
Yeah, they finally found out what killed him. It wasn't the blow to the head like they thought. The blow to the head was actually from the inside out, where they tried to scramble his brains like eggs. Huh. During the mummification project, they poked too hard and blew out his skull that way. It was actually malaria that killed him. Yeah, the DNA showed remnants of malaria. That's what killed him. That's the final judgment. You know, that's what it was after all these years of testing.
Took long enough to figure that out. Jeez.
Yeah. And, of course, the club leg, his leg wasn't from being broken. He had a club foot from being inbred. His father and mother were brother and sister, so that's where he got it.
Huh. So he was originally from Georgia then or something like that.
Yeah, somewhere in the American South, I'm sure.
Just parents kidding. Sorry, people from Georgia. Sorry, just kidding.
Anyway, we got a great guest tonight. I know you've been excited about this
one,
too.
We have an awesome guest today.
Of course, it's Peter Gilmore. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Ed and Mr. Reep.
Hey, Peter,
glad
how you
to
doing?
Be aboard with you. Very good tonight.
Good.
In case everyone doesn't know, why don't you introduce yourself as the magus of the Church of Satan? Tell everybody a little about yourself.
Well, I've been a member of the Church of Satan for many years, and I was a good friend of Anton LaVey, the founder. And he died, and I became one of the people running the organization after his passing, and I was consecrated as the high priest in 2001. So essentially, I run and own the organization.
Pretty cool. Well, for most people.
I think that's very cool.
Most people. But, you know, it's a very misunderstood organization.
To say the least, from my experiences, to say the least.
It's gotten a lot of bad press. Let's put it that way.
You know what? There's a lot of stupid people that like to nail a lot of things on the Church of Satan that isn't even reasonable, you know?
Well, that's really it. I think you've got a point there, Reed, that what happens is that the information is out there if anybody really wants to find it, especially now that there's an internet.
Yes.
If you type in Church of Satan, you can find our website, and there's a lot of information on
good
churchofsatan.com.
Information too, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it's right there. There's nothing to hide it. And there have been plenty of articles and interviews over the years that say exactly what we're about. If you look me up on YouTube, you'll find a lot of interviews that you can see. But the bad press is really not from real journalists. It's often from Christians with a particular agenda that they want to pin things on an organization that they're afraid of. And they're afraid of it for a good reason, because we're trying to teach people to think for themselves, to stand up for their individuality, not to bend their knee to some non-existent God and ask for a savior, to be saved by something that isn't even there. We stand for pride and individualism and liberty, and really that's something that most major organized religions are terrified of.
Yes, and it's very sad that those religions can't seem to find the strength to realize it was within themselves the whole time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's like the Wizard of Oz.
It is. It's like, if you've got the power to do something, God didn't do it. You did it yourself. Take some frickin' credit.
Exactly.
Well, if you give strength to the individual, don't you take away the power of the church or the power of the religion itself?
Yeah.
Well, it takes away power from an authoritarian religion that thrives on that wants to enslave people. But if they really took the direction that we did, where we thrive at having individuals, that the people in the Church of Satan are a bunch of free folk that follow their own bliss, they create what they can create, they live their lives to the fullest extent, and they're happy to be members of our organization. We don't have to scare them into it or tie them down or steal their annual incomes. It's really kind of a liberating thing to acknowledge the tool of Satanism, because that's what Satanism really is. It's a tool for getting the most out of life. It isn't a faith. It isn't some kind of belief system. It's just a set of principles that you can use to be the best you that you can be, yeah, and also to share that with the people that you care for.
It is kind of a belief in yourself, though, right? I mean,
well, but it's more than a belief, because you prove it. Yeah. For us, faith is something that is a short-circuiting of reason. We reject faith entirely. And what you do is know your own strengths and weaknesses. You always push yourself to see what those boundaries are. But you do know what they are, and you know, being self-aware is a very important thing for every Satanist.
Well, now, you know, one thing that really comes to mind, or comes up and pops up in my mind, is the, you know, particularly when it comes to the Christian church and how they seem to use the Church of Satan as a scapegoat nowadays. I'm curious as to why, ever since the 1400s, when the Maleficarium came into the picture. And they started, they had the witches and the Jews to play off as scapegoats way back then. And the Church of Satan really didn't pop up until around the mid to late, I think it was 1966?
Correct, yes.
Why wait so late to decide to start using them as a new scapegoat? I mean, was that just so that they could have another tool as their means of keeping their power or having someone new to blame? I mean, they already had witches and Jews and everyone else. Why add another to the list? I mean,
target. It was just, by taking on the name Satan, which means adversary in Hebrew, we are their adversaries, and rightly so, because we don't stand for that kind of mindless, numb existence that they promote for all their adherents, even for the people involved in it on a higher level. Those folks are really pretty zombified. But what's great about contemporary times is that really the Church of Satan doesn't get that much attacking from Christians, really. Only some fringe kook groups, because the main Christian church is more terrified of Islamic fundamentalism, which is really its biggest competition right now.
Yeah,
because
they're a lot alike, so isn't that ironic?
Oh, it's totally exactly correct. You've got that nailed, because they're the same kind of approach. They're fundamentalist fanatics, and the major Christian churches have to be afraid, because Islam is taking the kind of people that they'd usually suck into their ranks.
Exactly. It's like two gangs having a turf war.
Precisely.
Using the same tactics, using the same rhetoric,
Exactly. And the same belief in something that isn't there, or trying to scare people into doing things because of some promise of favor for some god that doesn't exist, or rewards in an afterlife.
Yes.
Are you getting virgins after you pass if you do some kind of act against another religion? But it's wonderful too that these people all hate each other. Essentially, they believe in the same one God, Allah and Jehovah. They're supposed to be the same deity,
yep,
really, but because they each have a different way of approaching it, they all hate each other and want to destroy each other. So that hypocrisy is really quite wonderful.
Yes.
And very telling.
And their saviors are all much alike, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you go back to it, you've got Abraham being the father of all three of the religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam.
What a troublemaker that dude was.
Which is really interesting, you know, somehow they all branch off and can't stand each other now.
Exactly. Now, if we had a time machine, just think about going back there and scotching that guy. We'd save the world a lot of grief.
Yeah, amen to that.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the comparison between the radical Islamics and the radical Christians. It seems like you're talking comparing it very much to the Crusades. Almost, it's almost like a revival of the Crusades we're having nowadays, or rather a continuation. It's
the
just kind of
modern day Crusade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's totally a continuation. You know, the war of Christians against the Islamic peoples is really, it's never ended. That the drive for territory and who wants to have the control over it, you know, originally it was for the holy cities, but now it's for the oil wealth.
Yeah, the holy oil. Yeah.
Yep. So it's never stopped.
So having faith in oneself rather than a deity really gives us power and control over the ability to avoid that. In a way.
It should. It absolutely should. But the whole point is to be aware. The real key that we promote in our philosophy is to be self-aware, to know what your strengths and weaknesses are, and pay attention to the people in the world around you. You know, that way you'll actually find people who can enrich your life, and you can love them.
Exactly. Even people you don't agree with, sometimes you can get some valuable perspective from those people.
Sure, you can always learn. See, the interesting thing about the Christian folk is that they think that because they promote love, you know, they claim to anyway,
yes,
that somehow, you know, they're exempt from any kind of blame for doing hateful and awful things. Whereas we Satanists, we say that love and hate are both equally natural to the human animal, but they're also equally rare in their fullest extent, and that both should be embraced because they're the appropriate responses to certain actions and elements in the people that you encounter.
And it's the way that you use those two elements of your natural self.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Hmm. You mentioned the Christian fundamentalist, and I've got to bring this up because I know you've had I know Reap's going to love this one.
Hate those guys.
Well, they're in particular. How about your experience with Bob Larson?
Oh, well, he's really kind of just a wonderful Christian clown. You know, the real thing is we think that he's pretty satanic. A lot of us do because he's just a sideshow kind of guy. He puts on this crazy show, and now he was doing exorcisms. It's all a bunch of hokum and hooey. And, you know, we Satanists totally appreciate carnies and those who take advantage of the rubes. And Larson, for a while, was really riding high. He had quite an empire. He was, you know, having ghostwriters write these crappy books, these, you know, just trashy horror novels that he was trying to claim were somehow promoting faith. And, you know, that all just failed after a while because he got exposed that he wasn't writing them. And then, you know, he went on to the exorcism scam, and that's just a sideshow. And really, you know, any smart Satanist could put on a show like that and, you know, make all the money and have a good time. You know, is Bob Larson really a Christian? Does he really believe that? You know, we'd have to look into his heart of hearts to find out, because sometimes I'd have to wonder, is it just a scam and a game for him to succeed and get the attention that he's desperate for, or is it really belief?
Yeah,
it's a good question.
That is something I wonder about many, many people. Do they really believe what they're selling? You know? I hope they don't, you know?
Well, they're selling it to people who generally are easy targets.
Yeah.
And again, that's why with somebody like Larson and a bunch of the evangelists, you really have to look at it and go, these guys aren't stupid. They're raking in lots of money. And, you know, they're buying fancy cars. They're supporting their mistresses or misters. And, you know, you watch them do this stuff, and they're living high on the hog. And the people that are sending in all this money are often, you know, doing what they can with their welfare checks or their Social Security. And, you know, they're eating cat food to send in money to these churches.
I know.
And really, you know, it's unfortunate. But hey, if people are that stupid, then, you know, stupidity should be painful.
Yes. In one way or another, right?
Well, is he one of those individuals that you refer to as a green-eyed hamster in a way?
Yeah. No, I think Bob is just really somebody who's just a good carny, you know, because he does know how to put on a show. And I haven't seen him in a while, but I hope those hair plugs grew in because he was looking kind of threadbare there for a while.
Yeah, big time. Well, that is a good point. That is a good thing to talk about, too. because I have read the satanic scriptures myself, and you know, and it's an amazing. It brings up a lot of these points that we talk about, and it's one of the better reads of the works of the of Satanists. Literary works in Satanism. But
Thank you.
The green-eyed hamsters explains a lot about how, I guess, how the human mind works when it comes to envy.
Exactly. Well, it's all about people who think that they're more talented than they really are. These are folks who look at you as somebody who's productive and accomplished, and they feel that they want to be on your level, but they don't want to have to do the work to get there. And they also want you to look at them and give them praise when they don't deserve it. Anybody who's a creative person has run into folks like that a lot. And before I coined that term, they wouldn't really know what to call these people. And that's actually one of the essays that got a lot of response when the book came out. Is that people said, yeah, I've run into these people all the time and didn't know how to think about them. But you know, now that they do and they can capsulize them and spot them coming, they can actually handle them by looking at them and saying, hey, what you're doing, it's crap. Go away. I'm not interested in teaching you. You know, you're just not worthy of it. So for anybody who's creative, like the burden of trying to help the people who are less talented, sometimes you know, you want to help somebody who's fledgling but who is good to give them some pointers and you give them some critiques. And then those kind of people actually grow and get better.
Yeah.
But the real green-eyed hamster types are the ones who never get better. They're just mediocre people, and you know, but they have delusions of grandeur, and it's and they want to tie themselves to you. They really feel that if they're somehow attached to your coattails, that other people will respect them, and they're so desperate for that kind of respect and attention. Go ahead.
Are those the same people who claim to have like special abilities or talents, you know, that are very rare and unique for just themselves? You know, because we know several people dealing with the paranormal who say they have special abilities and only they can do this. You can't do this, but they can. Would those be in the same?
Well, those people might just simply be insane.
Yeah. I would have to concur with that. Those are some of the people I was talking about where you wonder if they really believe that or if they're just trying to sucker people. You know what I mean? At night when they go to bed, do they really think that they're really that special, or are they just saying, ha 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 ha, you know?
Well, I guess it depends on if they got a paycheck that day.
I don't think it's all about the paycheck, though. I think a lot of it, oftentimes, is just about their ego, just being popular, and just people just having people come to them and say, oh, wow, you are wonderful, and admiring them, and worshiping them, and believing this load of crap that they sell to people.
Yeah, you're right on that. There are a lot of folks who really just simply want to be the center of folks' attention, and they don't earn it. And they'll make these false claims simply because they don't really have anything to offer. And you can always call them on it, though. That's the whole thing that's really crucial to any really aware person, is to always ask the questions.
Life's work, Peter.
Well, that's why it's such a pleasure to be here with you, because that's really how you have to approach life, is that when somebody makes these kind of claims, or any kind of claims, it doesn't matter what it is. It could even be a scientist with a new theory, and he starts saying, here's why anti-gravity won't work. And you have to say, well, let's look at this. Exactly. We really have to understand, you know, could there be something there? Is there evidence? You know, have you looked at all of the evidence, or have you excluded evidence that doesn't support the theory you're creating?
Exactly.
And for people, you know, who claim to have all kinds of paranormal abilities, you know, is this something that's natural to you? Is this something that you can demonstrate? You know, or is it just this rare thing, you know, that comes out of you like some kind of weird inadvertent fart once in a while?
Or like some kind of Marvel comic character.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that would be nice if somebody really was like that, you know. They could wear a costume and jump around, you know, on buildings and things.
They do that.
Believe me, I've seen some that have tried. So it sounds to me like there are more of these people, and I know what you're getting to. There's some of these individuals that perhaps they have these conferences and things. It's not necessarily the ones that put them on. They've got some that are out there in the spotlight, but they have these little leeches that go there, and they're hangers on. They hang out with the big folks, are the big names that are there, in hopes of maybe eventually getting invited, or maybe they've been invited and they're kind of low on the list, and they idolize the top names that are there. You know, they just want some semblance or some recognition for being there.
Yeah, it's like those slut groupies, you know.
Yeah, it's like recognition by osmosis or something.
That's,
you know,
true.
Just by being in the presence of that individual, somehow they're gonna be famous.
Yeah, well, that is like the green-eyed hamster type. That they want to tie themselves on, you know, hitch themselves to somebody who's much more productive and actually has done something. And the thing is, even that person might just have fame for an illegitimate reason, but they've at least done that. You know, that's something.
Yeah, I mean, at least they're known for, like you said, the groupies, at least they're known for sleeping around. I mean, they got something going for them.
One hopes. Either that or people just have very low standards.
I think I'd go with that one. That one's more likely.
I mean, come on, at least there's a plus in that direction. Now, there's a lot of interesting points and a lot of things that people have brought out about Satanism. And tonight we have plenty of time to get there and clear some of these up. But and right now we're still in the first hour, so we got 2 hours show here tonight. One of the things I want to get into, and that's because of all the things that have been brought up about and put into question here in these rough times, one of which is the, I guess, because of things like the youth coming, running rampant with Columbine and all of these youth-related violent things, and you see these youth coming out and screaming, I'm a Satanist or I'm a devil worshiper, and they're wearing all this black and they're having all these problems nowadays. That's been a big cry from law enforcement and parents and everything else, is they've kind of come down hard on Church of Satan, in the legitimate form, and screaming that that's what's influencing these kids. And, you know, how about getting into that? Because, you and I have talked about it many times, but as far as the public out there goes, you guys have some strict rules about all that and so forth, don't you?
Well, exactly. You know, Satanism teaches responsibility, and it also teaches you that, in order to succeed in civilization, that you have to understand how it works. And in order to take advantage of what's there, you have to know how to deal with the rules and work with them to get the most out of it. Now, for something like Columbine, when you had some intelligent kids who felt that they were being trodden upon, at least that's the sort of the popular perception of it, really, that for them to do what they did was just throwing their life away. In Satanism, we don't believe in any kind of afterlife. We think that every moment is precious. Anyone that you lose is something that you could never get back. So for us, our philosophy tells young people to concentrate on whatever their talents and abilities are. And if something is rough, find your way outside of it. You have to learn that high school and things like that are transitory, that often there are ways of doing independent study or getting away from, you know, the masses around you. If there are a bunch of stupid cows who are trying to torture you, find a way outside of it.
Yeah, that's why I went to independent study. You know, when I was in high school. But you have to give, you know, it's hard to be young, you know, and it's hard to know to do that. And these kids' parents are not giving them that option a lot of times, you know.
Well, it's really up to you each as an individual, you know, like you found a way. But there's, you know, nobody, I'm sure nobody took you by the hand and said, here, come do independent study.
My parents were a big effect in that, you know, they didn't. I didn't get roped into a religion. I wasn't told you have to conform or you have to deal with these things. I was actually given the option, but you know, a lot of kids don't have that option, or they're never taught that option, or you know what, they're not bright enough to think it up themselves, you know. And it's just, I know your point is right, but I think it's just a very sad thing that circumstances lead kids like that to where they ended up being.
It is sad. You know, if we really think if they were exposed to our philosophy at a younger age, they'd have more options. They'd realize
that. Yeah.
That it really, you know, was something that they could take into their own hands, that they weren't locked into something that not being herded into this direction, and, you know, they can step out of that queue, they can do something on their own. They wouldn't feel so frustrated.
I love the reference to cows, because, you know what, it's so much like that when you're in high school, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
It is.
You know, they really are. They're just, everybody's mooing around and not doing anything in particular,
yep. Exactly.
And they really hate the ones who stand out.
Yep.
Or live in trees.
Exactly. Cows and trees are always a bad thing.
Yeah, especially here on Dread Radio. I had to throw that in there. Those that have been abducted by aliens.
Now,
anyway.
I've got a 16-year-old daughter, and you can just see the ugliness of some of these kids, you know?
And what kind of school is she in?
Well, she's in public high school. Mm-hmm. And we have a high Mexican, Hispanic population here. So my daughter, we brought a Bible home and put it on the coffee table, and she got pissed and said, "What's that doing here?" You know? I was very proud of her for that. But you know what? She, at school, you know, she's talked to me. She can't say anything about Jesus that's negative because, you know what? She'll get ganged up on. Mm. You know? So it's hard for her to be herself sometimes. And, you know, just some of the ugliness, not even about religion, but just about social issues, especially girls. Girls are a lot meaner than boys, I think, these days. There's a lot of vanity that comes into it, you know? Mm-hmm. Boys, it's the testosterone thing, and for girls, it's the vanity, I think.
Hmm. Interesting.
No, it's hard for her sometimes, you know. And she actually got to the point where she got tired of people just talking smack and grabbed a girl by the back of her head and just punched her in the face. Hmm. You know, and it was hard for me to tell her, you know what, don't do that, because how much do you take before you finally have had enough?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, part of the thing is to really, you know, be clever about it. And it's hard to, you know, you can easily lose control. Yeah. But self-discipline is something that, you know, you as a parent can help teach your child.
Yeah.
You know, because you really need to take advantage of the situation. And part of, you know, her training for the rest of the world, because the thing is, the stupid people don't go away when you get out of high school. There's still plenty of them out there. But you just have to be much smarter about how you're going to step aside and around them so that you get the most out of life and leave them behind.
The best thing about her, that whole experience, was that she learned from it. And as long as she keeps learning from it, I am okay. As a parent, you know, your kids are going to make mistakes. And as long as they learn from them, then you can still, I'm very proud of her. She learned from it, and it won't happen again. But you know what? I think it needed to happen, and the girl that it happened to probably deserved it. To be honest. So maybe she learned too, or maybe not, but at least she had the opportunity.
Here, Peter with his satanic laugh in the background. Well, Peter, when it comes to kids, though, in the Church of Satan, though, do you have rules as far as, you know, we're talking about Columbine and the violence of kids. I don't, I guess you call it authorities in terms of police and churches and parents blaming, you know, the Church of Satan or Satanism and all this stuff on blaming a lot of this on the Church of Satan or Satanism. You guys have rules about the kids joining the church, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. We don't even accept children unless their parents are members and they're adult enough to have studied the literature, demonstrate an understanding of it, and, you know, in that way they can be part of it with their parents. But it's very rare that we would even have any children involved, because we think that for kids, they should be spending their time learning about all the different alternatives, not making a commitment so
exactly.
early.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more.
But they're not even, if I understand correctly, they're not even allowed in to take part in any rituals other than baptism, right?
No, not at all, no. No, you know, we're not like other organizations that are trying to get them from cradle to the grave. You know, we want adult, mature, productive people, people who have made a decision based on some years of reflection on themselves and on the world around them. So that's our criteria for membership, and that makes us very different from most religions.
Now, if someone wants to become a member of the Church of Satan, exactly how do they go about doing that?
Well, it's actually quite simple. You know, on our website, churchofsatan.com, we have a form that they fill out, and we have a one-time membership fee of $200. And basically, you can become a registered member, but we expect that you've read the Satanic Bible and the Satanic Scriptures and other literature, and that you agree with it first, and that, you know, you really feel that this philosophy is a reflection of your true nature.
I'm so doing that after the show.
So it's a simple process. Yeah. But, you know, from there, you get a membership card, and then that membership card functions as a key. It's a way for you to say to other people who have become members that I've been ballsy enough to make this commitment, and that, you know, here I am, and here's what I have to offer. See if I can stand with you, if you're interested in me as well. And that way you make a lot of friends. You might find other people to work with on projects. But it's not a social thing. It's not like there's a social club where we get together weekly and have meetings and rituals. See, for us, the whole ritual is a tool. It's something that you use to clear your psyche, essentially. If there's any emotions that are hindering you, you basically work them up and have a cathartic process to release them in the format of a ritual, so that outside of the ritual chamber, you're relaxed and can be enjoying your life and not feel pent up. So it's really a psychological approach. And a lot of Satanists don't even feel the need to do that. For them, their creativity is their own ritual, and they don't do anything formal at all. So whereas most churches have, you know, weekly or even daily ceremonies and obligations, there's nothing like that in the Church of Satan. It's very open-ended, and it's a really user-friendly kind of approach to doing this.
Now, I have a question that's probably coming to a lot of people's mind who are listening or going to listen. What role does Satan actually play in the church?
Satan serves as a symbol to us, and Satan is the symbol of liberty, individualism, and pride. And we see Satan as an external projection of the best within each of ourselves. So it's an inspirational symbol. When you look at Milton, who wrote about Satan as the one who wouldn't bow down to the authority of Jehovah, and if you looked at the way Satan was treated by Mark Twain as the sort of critical outsider, always a gentleman, but one who was always aware and definitely, you know, would pop the balloon of the pompous Jehovah, that's how we look at Satan, that we are each Satans. Satan is not some kind of being that exists, but really just the ultimate realization of ourselves.
Thank you for that, yes. Hopefully that'll clarify things for many people.
You mentioned how some of your rituals are basically just ways to kind of clear your mind. So, and an example being, for instance, the Rite of Ragnarok.
Oh, well, that one is, yeah, meant to be almost apocalyptic. If you feel that you're in a society that's repressing you, it's really meant to be a symbolic destruction of that society and making way for a new one that's going to be more to your value system.
So it's more of an exercise in exorcism type of thing. But not in the sense, not of exorcising demons, but when I use the term exorcism, I'm not referring to, for everyone listening, exorcising demons here, okay? We're talking about the Church of Satan, so
yeah,
we're not
exorcising. We can talk about demons more in a few minutes, because that seems to be the new fad.
Yeah. So we're not talking about exorcising demons. Keep in mind, we're talking about the Church of Satan here, so we're not going to be exorcising any demons today.
But, I'm sure the Christians are now disappointed.
Yes, I heard like a sigh, a really sad, you know, collective sigh from all the Christians.
But it's right when I mention that, because it's more or less an exercise in exorcism in terms of getting rid of negative things and or other, not negative things, but
emotions, right?
Just eliminating everything, isn't it?
Well, the Ragnarok rite specifically is really meant as Ragnarok in Norse mythology was when the gods fell and Valhalla was destroyed and a new world was created from its ashes. So what that's really, that one is specifically all about, using that context, those symbolism to really look at and say, if you're in a repressive society, say you lived, in an Islamic country, it would be a perfect right to do, because if you were a free thinker there, it would be a way of feeling, releasing your anger at this limiting society that keeps you bound from being the kind of person that you know yourself to be. So you can release all of that anger and frustration in this ritual.
I like how you compare it to Art Deco and the discovery of King Tutankhamun's tomb and for instance tiki lounges in the I believe it was in the 60s or 50s when they, was it tiki lounge craze was in I believe 1950s.
Oh, exactly.
How do you compare that right to all that and show how it use it, those comparisons to describe it, that ritual.
Well, what we do in Satanism is that we promote the idea of exoticism, and that was really something that we saw for most Americans, they'd know it, in the idea of the whole tiki phenomenon, where we look at some kind of external culture and we take things from it that we like, but we don't try to recreate it accurately. Because the thing is, people living in Polynesia, they have a pretty rotten lifestyle. You wouldn't want to be eating grubs and like living in some, crappy shack and, starving and having a terrible existence. But we look at the interesting tikis they carve, and, we sort of took that and then made cocktails and made interesting shirts and artwork. And so we created something new based on something that was outside of our culture, but something that we can enjoy. So what the Rite of Ragnarok does is it looks at Norse mythology and religion and takes the parts that we find that fit with Satanism and create a ritual that is satanic, but has really nothing to do with any kind of neo-Norse religion. I mean, there are plenty of people out there who are trying to recreate Norse religions, and we're not interested in doing that at all. We're interested in pulling the things out of the Norse religions that we find useful and interesting and using them to our own ends.
There are many religions that have done that but won't admit it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like
absolutely.
The Christians and the pagans, you know.
Well, the Christians took so much from the Mithraic religion, you know, and that was just a lot of theft from the pagans.
Yep.
And, you know, if you were a pagan at the time, you might have felt that, well, this isn't so different, and that's really was the smart scheme.
It was kind of sneaky, wasn't it? Yeah. They're kind of easing people into something else that was going to make them kind of victims.
Yeah. Well, you know, not all the pagan religions were so good either. You know,
no, I wouldn't say that either. Yeah, but I like the pagans more than I like the Christians.
Well, you know, I think it happens is that, you know, the Romans were very much a society like our contemporary society, because the educated ones really didn't believe so much that the gods existed. And what Rome as an empire expected was paying obeisance to Caesar and the Republic, you know, beforehand. And if you did that, you could do whatever you wanted. They didn't care. You could have whatever culture you wanted, as long as you followed that basic rule and you were a productive part of their society. And I really think for the Romans, if you took somebody from that time period and brought them up to now and they could speak our language, they'd completely fit in here, because we're pretty much the same, you know, the American empire across the world, except we have technology that they didn't. But the attitudes and approach to things are very, very similar.
Hmm. All right. Looks like we're coming up on our first break here. So, if you want to go ahead and take us out, Reap.
All right. You're listening to Dread Radio with myself, Reap So, and Ed Kraft, and Peter Gilmore from the Church of Satan. Glad to have you, Peter.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to play a little Black Sabbath. I think that's appropriate. We'll be back in 5 minutes, 54.7 seconds. You're listening to Dread Radio.
And welcome back live here to Dread Radio. I'm Ed Kraft with Reeb So, and our guest tonight, Peter Gilmore from the Church of Satan.
And Peter, did you notice how Ed's voice changes when we come back?
It's wonderful.
I love it. I think it's awesome. I practice at night before I go to bed. I practice my Ed Kraft impersonation.
Yeah, he's got to be one of those green hamsters.
I'm like, hey, baby, let's do it. Then she slaps me, and I don't get any. Thanks a lot, Ed.
Hey, well, that's not good.
I am not worried about you. I'm just happy with what I got. No, I'm getting it, so that's your problem.
Get some for me, too, will you?
Let's see here. What where the hell did we leave off? You made me forget my train of thought.
Sorry.
Thinking about tonight already. Anyway.
Just if you want to. That's an interesting topic. You
know, let's go there.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people look at Satanists and say, oh, are they killing cats or dogs or cows or something?
Yeah.
And, you know, the real thing about Satanism is that we feel that man is an animal just like all the rest. And therefore, we respect animals far more than a lot of other religions because we don't see that humans are any different. And Satanists, many of them choose to be involved with different animal protection groups, and most of them have pets of one sort or another that they treat completely as part of the family, and they usually love and respect them a lot more than most of the people they deal with in their daily lives.
Yeah, and my girlfriend is much like that. She likes dogs more than she likes people.
Good choice.
Yeah.
I should say, you can't blame her there. Well, I notice that a lot of the Satanists I've run across, and I think, Peter, you know, I've run across a few, thanks to you. I've know quite a few now. But there are more Satanists that I know that are involved in animal rights causes and charity causes than some of the other groups or some of the other religious groups or some of the other groups out there. For that simple reason that you mentioned, because they are consider themselves a part of the animal family, if you will.
Exactly. Well, and also animals are something that we find great beauty in. We watch them and we find that they live according to their instincts, that their natures aren't perverted. I think that so many people have their natures twisted by philosophies like Christianity and other spiritual doctrines that they really have circumvented any of the natural animal that they are, and they're behaving in a really twisted manner that makes them so unpleasant to be around.
You know, I was a vet tech for 15 years, and I was in Alabama, and the one thing that frustrated me the most when I was working there as that, and I did a lot of work with wildlife and the reptile rescue and everything else. And the one thing that frustrated me the most, even working with the Humane Society there, is there in Alabama, animals are property. We didn't have animal police with the Humane Society. We couldn't even, with the vets, could not even report supposed animal abuse because there was no one to enforce it. Their property.
Oh, that's pretty terrible.
No, and that to me was just the worst thing I had ever seen. And what's funny is that's the Bible Belt.
Well, you know, that's actually not funny. It's what you expect.
Ironic.
You would expect that. You know, and that's a sad thing.
Well, because, you know, Christians really feel that people are the only valuable things that live. They don't think that animals.
You said Christians, you cough a little. I don't blame you for that.
But, you know, that's really the part of, you know, and I think Islam is that way, too, that they really don't feel that anything that's non-human and anything that's non-whatever their beliefs are have any kind of value whatsoever. So, you know, it takes people who actually can have real empathy to respect animals.
Yes.
And folks who look at other human beings and say just because they deal with their deity in a different way that they're condemned to hell or they're evil or should be destroyed, how can we expect them to even begin to treat animals decently?
Yes.
You can't.
What I love is, I love that God loves you, but if you don't conform, you're going to be destroyed.
Yeah,
I don't get how people can say that. It always brings a little bit of, holy crap, are you okay, Ed?
Yeah, that's just touched the mic.
All right. Sorry, God. Just kidding.
We're about to be struck down.
No, but you've really got it. It's that, you know, anybody who really can be comfortable with themselves and can give love to you know, something like a pet that you bring into your house, whether it's a reptile or a mammal or, you know, an insect.
And we had a praying mantis that we tried to save, you know, from getting killed.
Well, they're beautiful. They're elegant.
They are.
They're also, if you know, one of the most advanced of the insects. They have, you know, the mobile heads and with the, you know, the kind of, you know, the way their bodies are, they're very highly evolved.
Yep.
Among insects. And, you know, how could you not admire something so beautiful?
Exactly. That's what we watch. Have you ever watched Bear Grylls on Discovery Channel?
No, I've never seen that.
He's a guy who goes out. He actually jumps out of plane so he can, like, kind of, he portrays himself as, like, being stranded somewhere. So he does what he has to do to survive, okay? And this guy will take animals and kill them and kind of actually torture them a little bit beforehand and do this dramatic, like, eating grubs live kind of deal, you know? Mm. And taking a frog and kind of twirling it by its legs before he kills it.
It's really kind of crappy.
Yeah, and my girlfriend has actually started a Facebook page that she hates him because he kills frogs.
Maybe he'll get his one of these days.
Yes, hopefully. Hopefully he's reincarnated as a frog.
Or, you know, he'll do that to the wrong kind of snake.
Exactly. I'm waiting for that, actually. We kind of sit here and we watch the show, and it's a wonderful show on one level because he does some really cool things with nature. You know, he can do some survival things that are very interesting, but at the same time, he takes a millipede or something that's poisonous, a poisonous bug, and instead of, like, throwing it the opposite direction of where he's walking, he throws it into the fire. You know?
Well, that's kind of telling, though, about a person. You know, that is really what you'd consider if you saw a kid doing that budding sociopathic behavior.
Exactly right. Couldn't agree more. And that's where I think a lot of people kind of fail to understand the Church of Satan, where they kind of associate this torturing of animals and these ritualistic things that a lot of misguided youth do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they associate with the Church of Satan. And you know what? If they would just do some reading, they could get beyond that and understand that, you know what, these kids don't understand what the hell they're doing. You know, they're just being stupid.
Well, what's interesting, too, on that level is that they're actually behaving like Christians. You see, if they really worship the devil and they really believe in their God and their devil, then they're just heretical Christians, but they're Christians nevertheless. And they would have that value of disregard completely for any kind of value to an animal's life. So that would allow them to do these kind of things.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you look at history, you know, Christianity arose from Judaism, and Judaism was a sacrificial cult. They used to slaughter all kinds of animals to Jehovah.
Exactly.
You know, the original temple had a giant basin that all the blood of the bulls was poured into. And, you know, when you read, you know, the early biblical stories, the whole point of, you know, the child sacrifice was even brought up. You know, it was finally done away with, but I would imagine that in its very primitive form, there was probably human sacrifice to, you know, the very earliest form of whatever that religion was that evolved into Judaism.
Yeah.
So, because they were all these very tribal kind of doctrines, and if they did believe that there was some kind of father God in the sky, it was natural for them to sacrifice animals, people, and you know, produce. So if they were an agricultural
exactly
society,
exactly right. And the Mayans were known for doing human sacrifices, and that's what the very sad story. Because the Spaniards came over and noticed the Mayans were, like, killing people, and they destroyed all this history. And this is where a lot of this 2112 thing comes from. Is a lot of the history was destroyed, so people just assume things.
Yeah, but if we're going to talk sacrifice, let's not forget the ultimate sacrifice in circumcision.
I'm circumcised, okay. And I'm still angry about it.
That was the ultimate sacrifice right there, as far as I'm concerned.
For the record, in case people don't know that, listeners don't know it, if you circumcise a male, it actually cuts down his sensitivity in his penis.
And that's a good question, too. Like, you know, if there is no real health reason for doing that, that's child mutilation, and it shouldn't be done.
And it's much like, can you imagine the girls in South Africa who were having their clitoris cut off by people?
Yeah, it's just horrendous.
It is
absolutely
horrendous.
Grotesque.
And I want to thank you, Peter, for making that clear. That, you know what, a lot of people would say, oh, you know what, that's satanic, that's evil, that's, you know, and it's not what you guys are about. And I get so pissed and so frustrated with so many people just labeling the Church of Satan without even looking into it at all, you know. And I've done shows. I do another radio show where I've actually read the Ten Commandments that you guys have posted on the website.
Oh, the Nine Satanic Statements.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? That's the way I live my life. You know? And I didn't know anything about it beforehand, but once I read it, I went, you know what? Yeah, nailed that one. Okay, yeah, I do that. Yeah, I do that. Yeah, I do that. And I'm not an evil person. You know what? I have morals, and I care about the guy who lives next door to me or the person that I pass when I cross in the street, you know?
Well, a lot of things that people think are evil, they really don't realize that it's just a way that they value something. Mm-hmm. You know, the terrorism has taught us a very important lesson, that the terrorists think that the people in this country are evil. Yep. And that they're attacking, you know, the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and any other kind of terrorist activity is really meant on their part to be combating a great evil.
Exactly. Much like we did when we wanted to be free of England.
Exactly. So you really have to understand always that these people are not just lunatics, but that they really are directed by a value system that is not the same as ours.
Exactly. And it's a matter of perspective.
Right, and values are human decisions. They're not intrinsic to the universe. The universe is utterly indifferent to us. Anything that's we consider good or evil, it's something that we just simply said that it is. It has no intrinsic good and evil, you know, as part of the universe. The universe doesn't care. There is no good and evil at all. There is no such thing in the world outside of human value.
It's almost like trying to say things are truth. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
A lot of times, you know what? Truth is perspective, just like good and evil is perspective.
No, it all depends on what your basic understanding and premises are. That forms your truth.
Exactly.
Okay. Bingo.
There are some truths, though. I mean, helium is lighter than air. You know what I mean? There are some truths.
Sure, sure. Well, but those are physics. You know,
exactly.
The thing is,
once you get to opinions, though, you know, then it changes a little bit.
Well, and that's really a crucial thing, is to note that there is a physical universe and that we can derive the laws of understanding how it behaves, and we can also understand the circumstances where those laws change, because they might be different in a heavy gravity well or, you know, at different times in the actual history of the way the universe expanded.
Exactly.
But that's all something that's we can investigate and try to learn about. But so-called spiritual truths or moral truths are just simply opinions.
It's the moral truths that I think are the monkey wrench in the works.
Well, they can't certainly be, because most morality is just simply there to control people.
Exactly. Or people want to force that morality on others and claim this is what's good because I think it's good. You know?
Well, and you know why they have to do that? It's because if they don't really feel they have a link to the absolute, then the things about it that they don't like, then they'd have to question and go, well, really, why am I doing this if this is an absolute? And then, you know, these ugly parts to it, why can't I give them up? They can't afford to have that question in their existence.
You're right. So it's very sad for them. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's why these, you know, particular, especially the fanatics, they can't have any non-believers around them, because the non-believers are the dangerous ones, because they show the rest of their people that there are other pathways that could be valid, because these other people are living and surviving. You know, you could look at the United States, you know, say you're living in an Islamic country, and you look over here, and we're still a very rich country, that, you know, we can go to supermarkets and get anything we want, you know, we buy cars and houses, you know, even though the times are tough economically, there's still so much that we have, so much wealth and richness.
Exactly.
that
we've taken for granted in many cases.
Exactly.
Yeah. And these folks who are trying to teach their people to believe something very stark and non-natural, and that what we do is wrong, well, those people, you know, have access to the internet now, and basically they look at it and go, well, wait a minute, you know, if these people are so evil, why does it look like they're having such a good time? And that's really the most deadly thing of all for these kind of religions.
Yes, and for the record, we are having a grand time. At least I can speak for myself. I'm having a grand time.
And so is everyone else, because we have a question from our producer, Polly, in the chat room. She wants to know, Peter, boxers or briefs?
Yeah!
Leave it to Polly to lighten things up.
Well, I'll leave that up to whoever finally is clever enough to get to see that on their own.
there you go, folks. Now, Peter, I have a question for you. Actually, I have two, but I'm going to start out with this one because I think it leads into the second one. And it's a big misconception, I think, or rather it's taken out of context by a lot of people. And we've talked about it here under other circumstances. But I think that it's really taken out of context in a lot of ways by a lot of different people when it comes up in terms of the Church of Satan. And that's eugenics.
Mm-hmm.
Can you get into some detail and explain the church's view on eugenics?
Certainly. Well, the whole point about eugenics, and what's interesting if you look at it historically, was it was something that was even promoted by religious organizations here in this country. I have a book on my shelf that has a foreword by a major Episcopalian saying how wonderful it is to try to breed better humans. For we Satanists, the idea for us is that if we have the ability to make a choice in what kind of characteristics our offspring will have, then why shouldn't we have the ability to do that? It's not something that we would force on people. It's not something that should be government mandated, but it's something that should be an option. Should we have the ability to actually improve ourselves? Why not? Like, why not have people that are resistant to various diseases, or who are physically more capable and have more stamina, who could live longer, who are brighter, who are more talented? That seems to me like a wonderful thing.
Jesus Christ.
Okay.
I think we might have a caller.
Yeah, we got a caller on the line here.
No.
Turn off the radio caller. Or Jeanette. What did she do? Shut her computer off?
Shut her computer off.
All right, well, that works, too.
Okay. I'm getting all kinds of echo BS. I'm getting all kinds of echo.
Jeanette, turn off the little you see on your chat room. You'll see a speaker.
Little thingy, got it. The other thingy, off.
Okay, turn both of those off.
They're off.
Is it still echoing? Are you still there, Jeanette?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. What's up?
Okay, that was freaky.
That's okay. It's just God trying to muddle things up.
Are you still there?
God?
No, God's not here, Jeanette. Go ahead.
Well, thank God. Okay, that was bad.
Go ahead, Jeanette. We're waiting on you.
You still there, Peter?
Yep.
Okay. Go ahead, Jeanette.
Sure, Ed, everyone, we're all here?
Yes, we're all here, Jeanette. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I have a question for Peter.
Shoot.
It's tri-quad-fold question. I would like to know your opinion on people like Mike Warnke.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is a whole nother ball game. I would like to know your opinion of him, but I would also like to know when certain parapsychics and groups and really well-known pseudo-celebrities claim that the Church of Satan is attacking them when in fact they are not, right? I'm curious.
What, how he deals with it, or?
Well, are you even aware of the shit that is talked?
Not really. That's the first time I've heard about that. So, no.
It does happen, though. I mean, I've seen it myself, where they claim that...
the Church of Satan is attacking us.
Yes, the Church of Satan is battling us, or against us, or... They're the ones that we're fighting against.
Some of the biggest names in the paranormal 2 years ago at an event in Savannah, they were all up in arms, and they had exorcists and demonologists by the fourth and dozens.
$29.95, who can be saved?
Well, because apparently they had received threats from the Church of Satan. And you know what? I was like, what are they going to do? Slash your tires. I'm going.
What's funny about that, just to jump on that quickly, is like trying to say they receive threats from the Church of Satan. The Church of Satan, doesn't exist as an entity in and of itself. Who would the threats come from specifically, and what would the threats be?
They didn't, and that's my point. These pseudo-celebrities wanted to instill some excitement on their, love and light, and
I think Peter has hunting Peter's
just
made it pretty clear
curious.
that the Church of Satan isn't an entity that's going to go after people.
No, it is many.
So it's much like their claims of being special or having special gifts. It's another thing they make up, I would think.
Yeah, it's a complete fantasy.
I know that, but I'm curious as to, does any of this ever get back to you? And you just kind of go, come on, give me a break.
You know, it actually hasn't. That's kind of funny. You know, it's like, I think there's a lot of desperate people out there who'd love for us to pay attention to them, but they're just too mediocre to be bothered with.
Amen to that, man. That is the best statement.
Oh, amen to that, because we're talking about the most mediocre of these pseudo-mediocre studios.
I think the point was brought up earlier, green hamsters, you know?
Yes,
that's what these people are. They're an envy of the Church of Satan. They're an envy of the Church of Satan.
So, yeah, let's talk about Mike Warnke now. Let's go back to the beginning.
I want to talk about Mike Warnke.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I read his book, The Satan Seller, when it came out, and thought it was pretty hilarious.
So you don't know him personally?
Let him talk, Jeanette.
No. Never met him. I've seen videos of him, because, you know, he started off with that book trying to claim that he was involved in some kind of satanic cult, and that it had thousands of people worldwide. But the funniest part about that was he started to talk about demons teleporting him places and making women appear for him. And it's clearly, if he really believed that was happening, and he did admit that he was heavily into drugs, it sounds like that's the explanation for all of that. But then afterwards, he became a kind of Christian comedian, and
he kind of converted and made a mockery of it. I mean, he had this best-selling book.
Yeah.
And
that's
what
Peter's explaining right now.
I grew up in his town. I grew up in his town. I've met the man. The place
of
his...
Well, because he's had many wives, and he tries to count people on marriages, and it seems that he's not very successful at that.
No. But the place that he claimed to have performed, you know, back in the 70s when he was a student at UC San Bernardino was the Barton Mansion. And the Barton Mansion was my personal para project for about 10 years, legally. I'm just curious because, you know, this was like, it's the biggest urban legend in my hometown, you know? Yeah. And all of this spewings that he had and the photographs and the websites. I mean, the Barton this, the Barton that. He was a student at UC San Bernardino who did too many drugs.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can all concur on that, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, huh? Jeanette, thanks for calling in. You got another question or?
No, I'll let you go.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we'll let Peter finish up and yeah.
Okay.
But thanks for calling.
Love you, Jeanette. Talk
all
to you
right,
later.
Bye.
All right.
But go ahead, Peter. Finish what you were saying up with that.
Sure. Well, yeah, Warnke was somebody that really was trying to promote this idea that he was part of some all-powerful cult that was working on all these different levels. It was the same kind of stuff that later was being talked about in the Satanic Panic. And really, it was just the fantasies of somebody who was, again, desperate for attention. And then he, you know, became an evangelist and would go around trying to say that, you know, there was all this satanic evil that he had to combat. And then he became a Christian comic. That was part of his shtick for a while. There may even be YouTube videos of it. People had sent me some tapes of his act, which really wasn't very funny. And later, I think he was trying to promote books or some kind of counseling about, you know, marriages, and it seemed kind of ironic to me, since he had really had many very failed marriages. That
so
how
he was
know
probably
how to
a
make
closet
a
Mormon, life. Right?
Well, I don't think any of them were concurrent, so I think he saw that. But, you know, he's just somebody who is, like, typical of the snake oil salesman. Tells you a story, wants the attention, there's really nothing to back it up. But, you know, there's a lot of people who will believe you regardless of what you say.
You know what? My dad always made the point that, you know what, the population has grown so large, and there are so many different types of people that you can do pretty much anything and get a following.
Oh, it's true. It's true. But again, there are so many people who really have no direction and no sense of self that they're just looking for somebody to pour something to the empty vessels that they are.
Yeah, because they're lazy.
Well, that's true. That is true.
They are lazy. And you know what? I come across so many people who are too lazy to form their own opinions. They have to grasp these opinions of other people. They're too lazy to think. They're too lazy to have opinions about things. They just want to grasp on. You know what? I think a lot of Christians are the same thing. Same way, if they read their own Bible. And we have a professor of psychology who we're close friends with, who's an atheist, who says if these people would read their own Bible, once they do, they're done. You know, and it's happened a lot, you know, and I've read the Bible, and you know what, that's probably where I came to be. I don't know if I'd call myself an atheist. I'm probably more closer to atheist, but I would like to think of myself as agnostic, because I'm not so stuck up to think I know everything about everything, you know? But once I started reading the Bible, that's where my doubt in the whole thing is grand stories. It's great stories. It's just like the ghost thing. People love ghost stories, but that doesn't make ghosts real.
True. It's true. Again, we need evidence for things. And I actually think the Bible, a lot of it's not grand stories. It's just tedious beyond words.
Yes, I would agree with that, yes. There are some grand stories, though. There's a lot of murder and killing in there, and everybody likes a horror movie.
Oh, but they don't even write it well. It's not even described.
It's not on video, so.
Notice, I find it amazing that you can sit there and read the Bible and read all these boring stories, but somehow Hollywood manages to do it better.
Oh, yeah, well, but you remember there's a very satanic movie called The Clockwork Orange, which comes from a wonderful novel.
The Clockwork Orange?
Love it. The best movie ever made.
That is my favorite movie
ever. I love that movie.
Now, remember, when Alex is in prison, he becomes a worker for the minister there. Yes. And what he does is he sits there and reads the Bible assiduously. But he reads all the gory parts and fantasizes about the violence.
Exactly, and loves every minute of it.
Absolutely. And what's even more interesting is... Wendy Carlos, who scored that movie, wonderful electronic music, had actually written some, they used Scheherazade, I think, in the actual movie by Korsakov, Rimsky-Korsakov to score that part. But Wendy had actually written kind of parodies of Christian hymns to underlie that scene, and they ended up, not being used, unfortunately, because I think they thought that the joke would go over a lot of people's heads.
Exactly right, yeah. What I love the threesome scene in that movie. I think that was excellent. For the time, I think that was incredible they could even get that on the screen.
Well, so much of that film, it was rated X when it was first released.
Yes, it was.
And it's still shocking to a lot of people.
I know, and shame on them. Lighten up.
Well, it's a wonderful piece of art, that movie, and it says so much about...
If you haven't watched A Clockwork Orange, I would say you need to watch that movie, because that is an awesome, awesome movie, and the book is even more wonderful, in my opinion.
It's still as good today as it was when I saw it back in the 70s.
Exactly. It stands the test of time. You've got to love that.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that just... It's a mind-blowing... It's a psychological... Thrill, actually, it's not even a thriller, really.
No, it's a thriller, in my opinion. I was thrilled
with
the whole movie.
I don't think it's a thriller. Yeah. But it really is one of those movies that it makes you think.
It does.
It should. And it explores human nature in a really perceptive way.
It does.
Yeah, it's not one of those... It's not a horror movie like you go to today, Jason and Freddy and all that crap. It's one of those movies that makes you think.
What? It's horror in its own way, you know?
Yeah, it's like... It's like Hitchcock used to do.
Exactly.
You never saw any blood. You never saw any of the real stuff. You know, anybody really getting killed. It really, all the horror was in your own mind.
You know what's ironic about that movie? Is we are growing closer and closer to actually doing that to people.
I think they are now.
In a different way, that will be a norm in our society. A very scary thing technology is sometimes.
Yeah. Well, we're coming up on a break here. We're on the hour, so actually we ran over a little bit. And we come back.
Peter's a grand guest.
I want to get back to some eugenics, and I also want, I want to talk about politics and some of the issues there with the Church of Satan, because I think the eugenics is going to fall into the question I have, and I think, Peter, you know where I'm going with this, the F word.
Yes, and I want to go into a bit of the word hell or the place hell, and how that kind of came into being.
So when we come back from the break, we'll do that. What you got lined up to play for us?
I've got a little tantric, a song called Astounded.
All right. You're listening
to Dread Radio with myself, Ed Kraft, and Peter Gilmore. Peter, pleased to have you on today.
I'm so pleased to be here with you guys.
We'll be right back. 4 minutes, 22.5 seconds.
found a new way through it again. I'll never wish you harm in life. I pray you find a way. I have found, I'll live my life discovering my fate. Oh, still I'm, she don't mind the change in the way. Now you're mine, we don't mind the change in the way. Hey, I just found my way.
All you stupid fuckers walk around astounded and drowning.
Hey, I just found my way. Some things can be lost, but now I found a new way through it again.
Listening to Dread Radio, myself, Reepso, with Ed Kraft and Peter Gilmore from the Church of Satan. Did I get my... I didn't get my Ed voice going, though.
No, you missed your Ed voice.
I know, I'm too drunk to even... Yeah.
Your ego got in the way.
I'm drunk, but reasonable.
That's crucial.
I forgot where the hell we left off.
Why do I keep doing that to you, Ed?
I don't know. It's been such a... Well, we've been talking in between the breaks there, so everything's been...
I almost sometimes wish the talk on the breaks would be on the show, because sometimes it's even better.
Yeah. Well, actually, probably get us arrested at the time.
It might.
Blown off the air or something. Where were we? We talked a little about the eugenics and stuff, but one of the things I wanted to talk about is we were talking about eugenics, Peter, was... That kind of leads into a concept that many people have associated with the Church of Satan. And they also associate it with a negative image of Nazis, and that's fascism. Mm-hmm. Where does the Church stand? And I know that Church of Satan has a very outstanding policy on politics, but how does fascism fall into... What is the Church's stance on fascism?
Okay, first let's just elucidate our stand on politics, is that politics are something pragmatic. Each individual member of the Church of Satan chooses whatever political climate around them is going to benefit them most, because it's a religion about yourself. You're your own God. You're your own highest value. So whatever politics work for giving you the most benefit wherever you are is what you'd approach. Now, fascism is something that you have to define. Fascism is a word that's used in many different contexts. Most people these days would call you, anybody, a fascist if you're promoting something they don't agree with. The feminists would say that somebody promoting, men's rights, oh, well, you're just, a fascist pig male. and you know, the actual fascism of the Third Reich and other countries that have adopted fascist systems, those are governmental systems that sacrifice the individual to the state. Now, since Satanism is a religion of individualism, naturally that kind of fascism is something that we are utterly against. Unless all the Satanists were the ones running the government, you know, and people were then, you know, helping them, which is, of course, absurd and a ridiculous fantasy that's nothing even remotely possible.
Exactly.
The whole concept of fascism is something that it's really congruent with Christianity and other spiritual religions, because what they'd like to do is make you sacrifice yourself to their God, to their savior. And, you know, it's the ideal form for any kind of a Christian state. And as a matter of fact, there's a wonderful book called The Handmaid's Tale, which is made into an interesting movie. And that was about a Christian fascist state. And folks these days have kind of overlooked that one. And it's really worth trying to dig up if you can through Netflix or, you know, or look in your local library. Or
what's the title on that again?
It's called The Handmaid's Tale.
Okay, gotcha.
And it's all about a very plausible Christian fascist state in contemporary world and the kind of consequences it would have for human rights and individualism, meaning that they'd be crushed utterly. But, you know, when people say that you're fascist for being somebody that actually has values and isn't willing to sit there and say everything goes, everything's equal, then that's the kind of fascist we Satanists are. Because we make our own values, we make our own choices, we decide what aesthetics suit us. We're very critical of how people apply their talents and abilities. So it's like, to put it in a parlance that some people might understand, if you're watching the show American Idol, Simon is the fascist because he's always telling people, you know, how bad they are and where they need to improve. Whereas Paula Abdul would be the non-fascist because she embraces just about everybody. So we Satanists would be more on Simon's side for being critical, but critical with reason, not maliciousness, by really holding to some kind of standard of values that we can construct and rationally understand.
Well, and I think a lot of people too, and I have to point this out too, for instance, the Rite of Ragnarok, a lot of the symbolism, which goes back to runes, and Reap and I have talked about this a lot, even with UFOs.
Did you call me Danny?
No, I called you Reap.
Just checking.
A lot of the symbolism, when we brought up UFOs, we brought up in terms of Nazi UFOs and how their occultism came into thing, and the occultism goes back, way back to runes and things like this, because, you know, that whole cult. Well, you guys use a lot of runes and things like that and symbolism, and that got tied into the Nazi culture, and they were government fascists, as you point out. But even what you use in a lot of your rituals is simply, you know, as you pointed out when we mentioned the Rite of Ragnarok,
runes are just ancient alphabet.
So people tie that in. People are tying that into that whole thing. So it's again a misconception. They're trying to tie two things into one again.
Because people are too simplistic sometimes.
Well, that's it exactly. What happens is that people have very knee-jerk reactions to certain symbols.
Yep.
Now, of course, a lot of Native Americans have been trying to take back the swastika because it's a symbol that's been used cross-culturally. The Romans
and the Egyptians did the same thing, only it was backwards.
Yeah, well, it's been used both ways, you know, clockwise and counterclockwise by many different cultures. The Nazis picked it up and used it, but it really shouldn't invalidate the other elements to it. But you see, again, for Satanists too, is that we understand the power of what haunts people's minds. And that's why we are the Church of Satan.
Yeah.
Because the symbol of Satan is something that pushes the right buttons in the right kind of people.
Yes.
That they hear that and go, you know, these folks are aligning themselves with the ultimate evil. And essentially, if they really, really believe that their God exists, and that, you know, we should sacrifice ourselves to things that God wants, then our philosophy of individualism and atheism is evil to them. So it's the right name for what we are, and it's the most potent image. If there was another figure in the culture, whether it be popular culture or even past literature, we'd use that name. And the thing is, when you look at the Satanic Bible, Anton LaVey lists all of these different devils that have been created by many, many different cultures.
Yeah.
And we use all of them in our rituals because they were always the spirits of rebellion and anti-authoritarianism. So
that is nothing less than genius, in my opinion. I mean, it's great. And a lot of people, I know demons are the big thing now. They're the fad now in the paranormal community. And a lot of the Christians always want to bring up hell and Lucifer being bad. But you know what? For those of you who will listen in the future or even listening now, the number of times hell is listed in the original text of the Bible, can anyone guess the number? It's zero. Okay? So if you didn't know that, now you know it. There is no reference to an actual place called hell in the original text of the Bible. It's translated by a guy who, King James, hired a bunch of translators, okay, and multiple translators, and if they didn't translate the text the way he liked it, he got rid of them, okay? And some of them translated it as the pit, and some translated it as other things, and there is actually no reference to a place called, or a place being hell, in the original text of any books of the Bible. And, while I'm on the subject, many books of the Bible got left out because King James didn't like them.
Also, even earlier than that, during the Council of Nicaea, when the Bible was being put together, a lot of texts that were part of all the different elements of Christianity were evaluated and rejected. And they even found a Gospel of Judas more recently. I think it came out of the Middle East. There's just so much. It's all fiction, naturally. So you have to choose which fiction is supporting whatever kind of point of view you're trying to get across.
Exactly.
And that's what the editors of all the holy texts do.
What's interesting is most of the scriptures that you mentioned have been dated. What is it called? Where they do the dating. I forget what the name of the
carbon procedure. Dated.
Carbon dating, yes. Yeah. And they have dated them, but they're actually
doesn't work. The universe is only 6,000 years old, Ed. Don't be silly.
Well, what I'm saying is they carbon dated them, and they're not even written by in the first party.
Oh, well, of course they're not.
They're written by, like, students of the individuals. Even the Gospel of Judas is not written by Judas. It's written, like, two generations later.
No,
and it is written two generations later. They have determined that.
Oh,
but they're written in the original time of Judas. So
there's an excellent book on the subject of analyzing, you know, those kind of texts. It's called The Myth Maker, and it's by a guy named Chaim Maccabee. And he's a Jewish scholar, and basically he looks at the Christian scriptures and shows that the original stuff in the Christian Bible is written by Saul of Tarsus, who was later called Saint Paul. And by looking at that guy, he was a wannabe Pharisee, who was a type of Jew, and but he was influenced by Greek mysticism. And whatever followers that, you know, Joshua, Yeshua, who was later called Jesus, had, they didn't believe him to be some kind of mystical savior. They just believed him to be another prophet. And Saul usurped the church from those folks and kept saying that he was seeing Jesus in dreams and that he then knew what he really meant. And it would be like somebody saying, you know, after John F. Kennedy's dead, oh, well, you know, he's been visiting me in dreams and telling me that, you know, he really wanted to create some kind of racist state. And, you know, so, and then that person then being the voice of John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
When, you know, because in those days nobody had any kind of direct
way
of recording what
somebody
did. And
Elvis did the same thing to many
people. Yeah, exactly. So it's this, that same kind of perversion of somebody who actually is charismatic enough to come up with some kind of scheme that's actually going to be bought by people who are desperate.
Yep.
He offered something that folks grabbed at because they were in a desperate situation. And, you know, that's really how that began. And the Christians really don't understand, many of them, that those texts, those gospels, the synoptic gospels that are supposed to be, you know, they're named after these different disciples, that they weren't written until, you know, many, many, many years after those people had died. And they're also contradictory if one looks at them. They're not telling quite the same story. Yeah. And that should be a clue, I would think. Reason isn't something that you find in a great quantity amongst those people. So
yes, I could have to agree with that. And you know what? There's many modern, like Michael Jackson, is probably having the same effect on many people.
Yes, the next thing we'll see is the Church of Michael Jackson.
It keeps going on. And the Beatles, John Lennon, I'm sure has had the same effect on people.
Yeah, well, at least Michael Jackson wrote some catchy tunes.
Exactly. And John Lennon has some wisdom in his writings. I don't agree with everything. And his wife was kind of a bitch. But, you know.
Yeah, she broke up the Beatles, you know.
Yeah, thanks loads.
Don't appreciate that.
You know. But a lot of people, you know, that does it does continue on. I mean, we kind of laugh about it now, but it actually does affect people in much the same way as any of the other people we've talked about in past times. You know?
Well, it's true. It's just that it's a natural way that humans behave.
It is natural. And that's what a lot of people, I think, overlook is nature and the way we are meant to think some things. And the way we think about things is natural. And I love studying the brain. You can't trust your brain, by the way, people. You cannot trust it. It'll trick you. But it's grand to look into the brain and just realize how we can be misguided. You know?
Oh, it's easy. It's very easy. Well, you know, if you study even optics, you can see how you can use various graphics to make you see something that isn't even there. It's
exactly. You know what? It's not just optics, but it's also any type of matrixing, whether it be from sounds or whether it be from sight or whether it be from touch and feel. If you look at your brain, and you know what? There's a lot of times where your brain, a lot of people's brains, parts of your brain will overlap. Okay, and that's natural. And I know that if I take in my forearm, if I hit like the right spot in my forearm, I can feel it behind my ear. Does that make me special? No, I don't think it does. I think that's natural, and it's just sometimes your neural patterns will overlap each other. It's normal, and our thinking does the same thing.
Also, too, the way we perceive reality is by taking a selected amount of the sensory data input and interpreting from it. There's yep. too much to actually embrace all of it simultaneously, so we edit it, our brain edits it, and then reads things out of things. That's why it's so easy to see faces and figures in clouds,
exactly.
that we're constantly interpreting things.
We want to make sense of randomness.
Right, well, exactly.
I'll give you a classic example of interpretation. You know, all that we interpret, exactly what, I'll give you the simplest interpretation. Lisa's deaf. She doesn't understand words.
And for the record, Lisa is Ed's fiance.
Yes. She does not, she speaks. And all she grew up learning auditory language. She's an amazing woman. She's accomplished more than
amazing.
I have,
yes,
anyone else has. She has double degrees, everything. She grew up in a totally speaking world. She didn't learn to sign until she was 16 years old, but she functioned in a normal public school system, everything. She grew up in an auditory system. So she doesn't hang out with deaf people. She works in a law firm with no one who signs. But basically, she has never heard a word of speech. She can only understand phonetics when she speaks. Every now and then she will mispronounce one word, because the only way she learned to speak was phonetically. And for most deaf people, and this is what I've encountered with her deaf friends, is those who can speak, and I say those who can because some cannot, because they have never heard what speech is like.
Yeah.
And so that's what you're talking about here when you're talking about interpreting. We understand our world is based on what we take into our minds,
yep.
What our minds bring in. That is how we perceive things. So for someone who lacks speech or lacks hearing, they have no clue what sound to speak. You know, what something sounds like.
Not just being deaf either. I mean, I have a son who has cerebral palsy, and
yeah.
a lot of people want to call him retarded or say he doesn't understand things, but he does have his own perception of things.
Yeah, if you've never seen the sun. If you're blind and you've never seen the sun, you may interpret the sun as blue.
Yes.
Well, you'd interpret the sun by your other senses, you know, the feel of the warmth on your
skin. The warmth, exactly.
Right.
The warmth.
But you,
you know what?
You wouldn't interpret the color of the sun. Someone could tell you it's yellow, but
well,
for
you
in your mind, yellow, yeah, yellow in your mind might be what we perceive as blue.
You know what's funny is a lot of people see numbers as colors.
Exactly.
That's a fact that's been studied, you know, where it's actually a fact. A lot of people, and I think it's like something in 1 in 1,000 people see numbers as colors. They don't see them as numbers like you and I would, but they see them as the color red or green. It's very, very odd the way your mind works.
Also, yeah. there were some composers who were working with the idea of synesthesia, which is mixing, you know, sound and color. And
yes.
there's... Yeah, and it's really something that some people do. They would perceive certain sounds as having a color tinge to them.
There are a lot of people, from what I've read, that do have that. They have that ability where they see notes as colors. And you know what? Some of the greatest composers we've ever known have had that ability. It's very interesting.
It's just a different matter of perception. Well, yes. And it's really something that has to be constantly explored, because that's our gateway into the universe around us.
And exactly, to understand, and that's real science, and we need to pay attention to that.
Exactly. And that's another sad thing about contemporary time, is that science is often so overlooked that it really is our tool of rationally examining the world around us. And science itself, can sometimes work against itself, because if there are people who are famous scientists who create theories that are dogmatic and are not using all of the data that's possible, then they're just as hidebound as the religionists. That there can be anomalies, and the anomalies have to be explored. You have to understand what those things are.
They should not be ignored. They should be explored.
Exactly.
Right. Now, we're coming. I know we would normally take a break here, but if you guys are okay, I think we should run through this.
That's
okay?
Fine with me.
Sure.
Okay.
I can talk all day long. You know that.
Well, I don't want to waste this last half hour, because there's one subject, and if Polly can, our producer, which, by the way, we could not live without. Thank God she's here with us tonight.
Thank you, Polly. Thank you. And she's gorgeous, too, by the way.
If you could give out the telephone number in the chat room, and so I can see it, and we'll give it out here on the air. Anybody can call, we'll get callers in here. We'll take your questions. But one thing that's a popular topic here politically, socially, we're talking about same-sex marriages in California, the laws being repealed.
I kind of want to touch on that, too,
We've also got the don't ask, don't tell in the military, but the founding family morality versus same-sex marriage in terms of the satanic scriptures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
by the way, hang on a second. The call-in number tonight, too, folks, is 559-316-4737. Again, that's 559-316-4737. Sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Oh, no problem. I basically think that what weddings function as these days are a way of bringing somebody who is not a blood relative into your family. That the old traditions of, you're doing it just for family and for community and all that kind of thing are really not the way it functions anymore. What happens with the religion people, the Christians, they say, well, marriage can only be defined as between man and woman, and that's really looking back to this concept of using women as chattel to just breed heirs.
That is a weak argument at best, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, Peter.
And I agree that basically I am completely for same-sex marriage, because I think if people love each other, they should be able to bring them into their family. They can, legally, it's the only way to have the right kind of clout.
Exactly.
Because even I have many friends who worked at trying to have different kinds of unions, civil unions and whatever, but none of it legally has the same clout as actual marriage.
Yeah.
So I would basically myself advocate that it becomes something universal. It's a human rights issue.
Yes.
That, gay people should be able to obviously marry each other. And there's been so much done to show that it's really an issue of love and commitment. And I think on some level that when you find these folks have relationships that can be longer and more loving than
I was going to make that point, too. You know what? Same-sex marriages last longer than heterosexual marriages do.
It's kind of damning, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess. I think it's kind of proves the point, in my opinion, but a lot of people want to overlook that and just label them.
Well, it's really just treating people as substandard human beings to deny that. I really think that it's, the wedding ritual can be whatever is necessary. It can be just a simple legal thing, or it could be something that people want to create for themselves.
Yeah.
But, and religious people don't have to be forced to marry same-sex couples in their organizations if they don't believe in that. But I would think that any gay folk who are part of their churches would leave if that was the case, and rightly so. So, let these people really show their true face, not hide behind a mask. If they want to deny people their rights, then the people involved whose rights are being denied should basically depart from their following. I think that would be the fair thing to do.
Yep. It's, all right, the, last, it's the last prejudice, homosexuality, you know?
Well, I just watched a recent episode. I was watching this marathon because one of the shows I like, because they do bring up so many different social issues, is Boston Legal. It's not on anymore.
Oh, it's a great show, yeah. Peggy and I both enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, they bring up so many different sides of so many different issues. And it was the last one where Denny Crane wanted to marry Alan Shore.
And did.
Yeah, because I liked it because it brought up that very issue of same-sex marriage, but not in the sense that they were homosexual, but because he wanted to give his best friend the right to care for him. Once he went beyond the point of his Alzheimer's progressed to the point where he couldn't make decisions for himself, and he could leave everything to him,
exactly.
Rather than go through all the other stuff. I mean, that brought up opened a whole new door for me in terms of, hey, wait a minute, it's not just that. You got to, you know, there are a lot of people out there who would love to do that for that reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, and that made the point of my essay, which I had written years before that show even aired. That was precisely my point that last episode of that show made, is that marriage is a way of bringing somebody into your family. It's more than adoption. It's making somebody your spouse and your equal, and they are now your blood, essentially, under the way the law works.
Hmm. Yeah, and you have to consider that, especially now, and I agree with you fully on that. You have to really go there and consider. There's a lot of things now. We have so many legalities with divorce, even with regular marriage. You have custody issues, and we have all these situations where now we have single mothers who are having children via test tube babies, or I don't know what the proper political term is now, or socially correct term, or whatever the hell they're calling even that now. You know, we have to be politically correct, I guess is the term I'm supposed to use now. I can't even keep up with what you're supposed to use to use the terms anymore, because they keep changing that. But you're having single mothers who are having babies that, you know, or they're having surrogates, and there's so many different legal issues involved with this that it seems only right to have same-sex marriages for that reason alone.
But it's even just simpler than that. It's just a very human issue. If two people love each other and they want to have a committed relationship, then why shouldn't we allow that? You know, should it be denied just because they're of the same sex? It just doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 110%. All right, let's see.
We've got somebody in the chat saying Peter hasn't addressed the ritual sacrifice thing, but I think Peter has. But Peter, can you reiterate
point? Okay, well, let me ask, before you do that, let me just ask him one question in regard to what you're asking him. Peter, have you gone to your, before you came on the show tonight, did you stop by the little gingerbread house and have, dinner with
Did you eat some children?
Yeah, did you eat some children with the little witch?
Yes, and they were quite tender, too. They were done quite properly.
I like them that way, too.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
You know, it's just, you know what, and I don't agree with the chat room where they're saying he hasn't addressed things. I think he has, but Peter, one more time, the ritual sacrifice thing, just your opinion on it, please.
Okay, well, very simply, since Satanists are atheists, we don't believe that there's any kind of God or devil. The whole point to any kind of sacrifice is to make an offering to either a God or a devil. So it's completely irrational for us to even do anything along those lines. It is rational for people like Christians to make sacrifices. And, you know, the Jews, as I said earlier, were making sacrifices of animals and such before, you know, the later part of their history. So it's a part of spiritual religion where there are belief in deities, people who believe in Santeria, which is like an Afro-Caribbean syncretic religion.
Yeah, exactly.
That, you know, like they make sacrifices because they believe that these various saints are the same, they're just masks for ancient African gods. You know, they do, you know, animal sacrifice because they believe they're offering something to beings that exist. Yeah. We don't believe in any of these beings, so sacrifice is utterly pointless for us.
And
now, there might
you,
be
yeah.
kids who are Christian devil worshippers who believe in the Christian God and who believe in the Christian devil. They're heretical Christians, and they may, you know, kill a cat or something, because their minister told them that's what devil worshippers do.
You know what? Inadvertently, that's a Christian thing. The Christians have brought that upon that.
Exactly.
You know, I want to thank you, Peter, for making it clear. You know, and we're not saying those things do not occur. Don't get us wrong, okay? Those things
do
occur.
They're not as common as you might think, though.
Yeah, you know what? But a lot of people like to grasp that because it's so dramatic, you know?
All right. But
if a group of stupid kids get drunk and kill a cat or torture a dog, those things do occur once in a while, okay? I will agree with that. But Peter's already said that, you know what, that's not part of the Church of Satan. So let's get that clear.
But here's the point. It is not a part of the Church of Satan. And when people do it in the name of the Church of Satan,
they're misguided, to say the least.
I think here's the point. They have the individual in chat room saying this, that they have film of that stuff, but they are making that choice. And if these are kids doing it, they're doing it on their own. But anyone who does, and I think it has reference to someone who earlier said that they are making these claims in the name of the Church of Satan. But I think Peter clarified that earlier when he said that the Church of Satan is in a group of individuals.
Yes.
And if they're making it in the name of the Church of Satan.
And for the record, many Christians do not agree with Christian fundamentalists. They are embarrassed by the acts of Christians. Okay? So it goes into any belief system. It's not just Christians, but it's also, if you go into the Muslim belief, a lot of people do not interpret the Muslim beliefs the way terrorists do, or the way the fundamentalists do, or the extremists do. Okay? That goes into any belief system. You guys need to you need to understand how this is going. There are always extremists in any belief system you have.
I'll put it simply here. The question is, but they act in the name of. I will say this. There are extremists who act in the name of anything. But just to say that I act in the name of this one, that one, or the other one doesn't mean...
That doesn't give it credibility.
Exactly. The extremists who on 9/11 acted in the name of Islam. That does not make all Islamics evil.
Exactly.
Okay.
Also, here's something just quite simple, too, is that anybody who has read the Satanic Bible, if they read page 89, it says at the very top of that page, under no circumstances, with no capitalized, would a Satanist sacrifice any animal or baby.
Yes.
Very simple, very direct.
It is very simple. It seems like common sense to me.
Okay. To answer the question in chat room, who is responsible? The individuals who did it. That's who's responsible.
That's kind of a weakness, I think, that in society today we are suffering, where you don't take responsibility for your own acts. You know, it doesn't matter if you want to say I'm doing this in the name of, or I'm doing this on behalf of. Take responsibility for your own personal acts, and you know what? Be accountable for them.
Exactly.
Yep.
That's what our philosophy is completely about. Complete self-responsibility. To accept your successes and your failures.
Exactly. You know what? Accept your failures and don't do them again if they're failures.
Well, that would take some reason and some responsibility, wouldn't it?
You know what? I can only wish, you know?
Oh, boy. That was a tough one there. Anyway, back to subject at hand. Let's lighten. Polly, where are you when we need you? Throw something out.
Yeah, Polly, ask again. We can ask Peter who his favorite porn star is.
Yeah, who's your favorite porn star?
You know, I really don't have one. It's been a while since I've really been looking at that stuff. So I can't say. I'd have to leave that up in the air.
As long as you admit watching porn at one time or another, Peter, I love you.
Oh, of course.
Yes, nope. Bless you. Yeah.
Oh, come on. Everybody loves porn. Are
you sure? No one wants to admit it, but we all watch porn. It's like there's always a sex toy in the drawer somewhere, you know? You never talk about it, though.
I think now we're going to need a video feed of your drawer.
Polly, get on that. I follow her lead.
That could get pretty scary. Let's see here. I'm looking at, and you and I talked about this, Peter, when we were on the phone the other day. And the last time, well, not this, the other day, but when I talked to you on the phone, we were talking about the, here in San Francisco, the house, Anton LaVey's house. Black, what was it, the Black House?
Yeah, that's how people called it. It was his home for many, many years.
Yeah. I wanted to clarify, because someone else asked me about that the other day.
Yeah, we have to go there sometime. People... Can we still go there, or what?
Oh, it was torn down.
That's what I wanted to clarify for that.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, it was no torn down. There. There's now condos there. And they even
changed... the way of the world.
Well, and they changed even the address. You know, the address was 6114 California Street, and that address no longer exists. The house is gone. There's a building there that doesn't look anything like the Black House. And that street number is no longer there.
That's kind of a shame. That's history lost right there, in my opinion.
Well, it is, but, you know, one thing that I think is in sync with Anton LaVey's wishes was that he really felt that that house was motivated by himself. He was the genius loci of that place. And therefore, without him being in it, he didn't feel it should go on without him. So I think he would have been pleased that it was destroyed after his passing. And really, it now exists as a kind of archetype that's inspiring other people to make their own black houses.
Yeah.
Hmm. That's a unique location anyway, especially in San Francisco. So,
well, you know, it, on a certain level, too, you know, over the years, there'd be crazy people going by there and shooting through the windows. They had to put up a fence with barbed wire on the top of it around that place because just too many rabid, nutty people would cause trouble. And there was always, you know, somebody outside having to watch to make sure that there wasn't some kind of criminal activity going on centered around the house. And Halloween was often the worst time. These, like, all kinds of crazy people would come by and throw things at the house. You know, people are just savage sometimes.
Or nuts. And Peter, on that note, do you have to deal with a lot of people who are rolling up on you and just hating you, or do you have to worry about your own safety sometimes, or?
Well, fortunately, being here in New York City, New Yorkers tend to be the kind of folks who keep to themselves. Yeah. It's the tourists that notice people. Like, you know, there are a lot of celebrities in the city, and for other New Yorkers, it's uncool to act like, oh, I'm noticing a celebrity.
Yeah.
So in this town, it's really very relaxed. You can go about your own way, and people don't bother you.
All right. I'll tell you what, folks. Do we have any callers out there who are interested in a copy of the Encyclopedia of Vampires, Werewolves, and Other Mysteries by Rosemary Ellen Guiley, autographed? If so, we're going to let Peter give out a question tonight. Peter, come up with a question regarding the Church of Satan that you've already talked about tonight. And ask the chat room or callers. We want someone to call in.
Should we take a quick break so Peter can think? Because that's not like ordering him right now.
Let's give you time to think. We'll give you a quick chance to think. We'll give the callers time to think review what you said tonight. And we're going to give away a copy of the Encyclopedia of Vampires, Werewolves, and Other Monsters by Rosemary Ellen Guiley, autographed.
You know what? To be honest, I'm not that hot on Rosemary. I think she means well, but I think she's misguided.
Well, it's an encyclopedia. Got a lot of information.
All right, so it's an encyclopedia. I'll let it pass.
Pretty much a conglomerated thing.
All right, next time I get to pick the book, man.
Well, this has information about Bram Stoker's Dracula, Chupacabra, all that good stuff.
Oh, man, don't bring the Chupacabra into this. Come on.
And no cows and trees. So
yes, well, at least there's that. Okay, let's play a little Devil's Dance Floor. And Paulie and I are getting married this June. We're going to play this song on our wedding night. So we'll be back in 3 minutes, 58.6 seconds. You're listening to Dread Radio with myself, Reepso, Ed Kraft, and, of course, Peter Gilmore. Bless you, Peter, if you need it. We'll be back.
Sanity crushed beneath her wave like a ship I could not reach the shore. We're all just dancers on the devil's dance floor. Now swing a little more, little more, and a merry go. Swing a little more, little more, it's the name. Swing a little more, little more, and a merry go. Swing a little more on the devil's dance floor. Rushed against her face, I could feel her
eternity. Might have been a drunk and her father was obscurity. Nothing ever came from a life that was a simple one. Pull yourself together, girl, have a little fun. When she took me by the hand, I could see she was a furry one. Her legs ran all the way up to heaven and past Avalon. Tell me something, girl, what it is you have in store. She said, come with me now, on the devil's dance floor. Well, swing a little more.
Welcome back live here to Dread Radio. I'm Ed Kraft with Reap So, and our guest tonight, Peter Gilmore, High Priest of the Church of Satan.
And you're listening to us on PulseRadioOnline.net, by the way.
Gotta love them. Big hello to Lee out there.
Happy birthday, Lee, by the way.
Got to love the man. And,
man, he's getting old. 42 years old. Man, I am so glad I'm 41.
It's like, you guys are all young kids, for crying out loud.
I know. Thank you.
I'm losing my hair. My beard's turning gray.
I just shaved my head.
No comment, Peter. I looked at that picture. Thank God I use Just for Men.
I think Peter looks handsome. Shut up, Ed.
We'd look identical if I wasn't using Just for Men on my beard.
Nice try, Ed. Nice try, fail.
Actually, I am. but anyway, we'll get off that subject real quick before I get us both in trouble. We're going to give away a book tonight here on Dread Radio. Oh, and before I get into that, Peter, tell everyone, I want everyone to read this, because how they can get to the website, because that's how you can join the Church of Satan. And in order to do that, you got to read a couple of books. So tell
reading
them how to do
isn't
that.
Bad. Do it. It doesn't hurt you.
No, it will not kill you. Your hands will not burn up.
Yeah,
you will
I
not
know.
Get imprints of upside down pinnacles or, on
pentagrams.
Your hands. Pentagrams, pinnacles, the whole nine yards on top of your hands, and, 66 across your forehead will not burn in there when you buy these books.
Unless you want to do it to yourself.
Yeah, if you want to do that, that's your
God.
Own problem.
Whatever turned you on.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God.
I've understood this branding thing.
I'm going to have callers saying you're promoting, what is it, Charles Manson now?
No.
Don't talk about him.
Don't go talking about branding people.
That dude is a waste of time. Just keep going.
Let's not even go with that topic, branding.
Well, let's pass right on by that. And
yes,
people want to go.
Yeah, you know what? I would concur with that.
That's going to stir up a whole other can of worms. So let's not.
You know,
that
whole thing is just a very sad and stupid story.
Yeah. Let's
nothing
move
less,
past the branding.
More. So, anyways, let's ask the question if we can.
Well, first, if people want to learn about the Church of Satan, they should go to www.churchofsatan.com. And there's plenty of literature there that they can read. But aside from what's on the website, I would suggest the two books that really give you the basics of Satanism are The Satanic Bible by Anton Zandor LaVey, the man who founded the organization. That book came out in 1969, and it's really been the basis for Satanism worldwide.
Yeah, it's stood the test of time also.
It really has. It's remained in continuous print since it was published. Yep. And I'd also suggest that people read my book, The Satanic Scriptures, because it really gives you an overview of how the organization functions today, and it explores some topics in greater depth and detail that I think they'd find interesting if they enjoyed this conversation tonight.
I would agree.
And avoid the Necronomicon. That is total bullshit.
What the hell are you talking about?
The Necronomicon. It came out a while.
What the hell is that?
It's total fiction, but I noticed that a lot of people out there, a lot of kids in particular, have read the book, The Necronomicon. It's a fictional book that is allegedly the Satanic Bible. I think it even says it on the back.
Why do people keep doing that?
I don't know, but it's
like,
a fictional
what's his name?
Book.
Wrote
it even
the
says
prologue to Darwinism. What is his name? The guy who was on TV, the stupid ass? Kirk Cameron. Shut up, you idiots. Please.
The book even claims to be fiction, but a lot of kids take it to be fact.
Yeah, that's sad.
I have a detailed essay about that on churchofsatan.com, because the idea of the Necronomicon, it was a fictional book invented by H.P. Lovecraft as the great grimoire that all his stories used. And the thing is, people have now created fake versions of it. There's a number of them. It's not just one. The one that you see that's published that Simon wrote, he was sort of a cultist, and you know that's meant to duplicate what Lovecraft talks about, but it's all just made up stuff. So read the essay on churchofsatan.com about the Necronomicon.
Yes, please, go to churchofsatan.com and get some real information.
And it's free to go there, so don't. Again, it doesn't cost you anything to learn.
Except maybe your innocence.
Yeah,
you know what? You deserve to lose that.
And your ignorance.
Yes, amen. Yeah,
amen.
I'd have to concur again.
Now, tonight we're giving away a copy of the Encyclopedia of Vampires, Werewolves, and Other Monsters by Rosemary Ellen Guiley, autographed. So if you want to win the book, you're going to have to call in or answer a question in the chat room. And our guest tonight, Peter H. Gilmore, the high priest of the Church of Satan, is going to ask a question, and you're going to have to answer it. So, Peter, what's the question tonight?
Okay, it's an easy one. Who has been the best friend the Church has ever had, as he's kept it in business all these years?
Nice.
Ooh.
Good question.
Ooh.
For an answer, I want to ask Peter, how do you become a priest of the Church of Satan? I know there's a couple guys, a guy does a show called Satanism Today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, if you want to do that, how could you do that? I mean,
well, it's kind of tough, really, because for us, a priesthood is not only somebody has reached a level of being able to explain our philosophy at a very detailed and cogent way, but they also have to be somebody who's achieved something in the real world, because we don't believe just in this kind of book learning and ivory tower kind of existence. Satanism is carnal religion. It's the world's only carnal religion, really. And in order to be carnal, you have to live in the world. You have to do something. So all the people in our priesthood are very accomplished people in some field of endeavor outside of Satanism.
Yeah. So you have to be an active participant in your beliefs, right?
Well, you know, in Satanism, it's really not so much about belief, but to be a Satanist means to apply the philosophy towards moving the world according to your will. So all Satanists should be doing that. You know, otherwise, they're probably not getting anywhere.
Yeah. I would agree. Maybe I'll try and do that one of these days.
Well, I think you're moving the world. Certainly
I'm trying
getting
to.
Out there.
Damn yeah. them.
Let's see. Some of the answers we've gotten so far are Chris Maniacal, Gene Kent,
that's not right.
Adolf Hitler. Oh, man. We're really They're having a hard time with this
one. They are having a hard time.
Interesting. It's pretty simple, folks. It's pretty obvious and pretty simple. Pretty obvious and pretty simple.
Well, we wouldn't tell them now. You'll have to wait to see.
No, no. We're gonna have to wait.
Knocker Lee says God. I almost want to give him a book just because that's so freaking hilarious.
Pretty interesting.
Okay, so Peter, you talk about the church not being an entity. There's got to be ways you try and promote, or you try to move the Church of Satan. I mean, how do you guys do that? I mean, do you wait for the individuals to do that, or you do your what? Is there some kind of mindset? Is there something where you actually try to do that organizational, or just let it kind of just flow?
Well, we're basically not trying to promote any kind of specific thing as an organization. You know, what we do is the Church of Satan's function is to make sure that the philosophy is communicated with as much clarity as possible in as many different languages as possible. That's really what we're about. So our goal is to get more information out there about what the philosophy is, so there won't be these kind of misconceptions, and it won't allow people to be able to pretend that we're some kind of devil worshippers. My book has been translated into a number of different languages already, and so is the Satanic Bible. So this way we're really getting this out there for folks to understand, so that there can be no misconceptions. Yeah. But we're not like churches are saying, oh, we need so many members, or we have some kind of goal towards doing something specific. When you have an organization of complete individualists, it just isn't rational to even approach it that way.
You know what? I would think that would be good thinking. Yeah. But is there some place where Satanists do like congregate, where they can exchange like minds or ideas and kind of bounce things off each other? I mean, is that at churchofsatan.com or?
Well, churchofsatan.com has information, and you'll find on their links to places where there are online sources for people to, you know, exchange ideas. Just look on the links page there.
Okay.
But really, Satanists are very organic in the way they approach things. They make friends with other people that they find interesting, and that's where they exchange ideas.
Yeah.
A Satanist might go to a restaurant together, or might go see a movie that's
that is
that's
funny, because we do that all the time.
Yeah, you know, it's again, not this artificial kind of set up the way most religions have, where everybody's
got to get together.
You don't
go to a pew somewhere and all nod your heads in unison, you know, and I think that's a
right.
Good thing. Yeah.
Yeah, they're all expecting, everybody's putting on a black robe and lighting a black candle, going, hey,
lighting some candles.
Yeah. No, it doesn't
I think
work
that out. goes back to the video, or rather the interview that Anton LaVey did with the wedding ceremony. Years
well, he
back.
showed, you know, he showed a wedding ceremony.
Yeah,
and,
that's the one I'm referring to, where they had the audience. He was very theatrical and to play it up, and he had the.
No, but you know what? That was genius.
Yeah, that was a brainstorm.
Nothing less than genius.
Yeah. He had them come in, and they really did it up, and with that, that's when he invited them in and to the Black House and had the whole thing. And I think that's what everybody has ever since then envisioned.
They've latched on to that.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, it was a very powerful publicity act. And Anton LaVey was a great showman, so that's how it works.
He was. You know what? And it worked.
And I think that's why they still envision those black robes and him wearing the horns. And I think that's what really got everybody's attention. I think that's why they still associate that type of scenario with the church.
I think Peter said that. You know what? You need to shock people to make them think sometimes. And that's what I try to do. You shock people sometimes. You say things that are outrageous just so you can get them to just think. Just think, people.
Mm-hmm.
We did a ritual on the 6/6/2006. Basically to mock people's fear of that number, because of course Satanists think it's hilarious that people would think a number was scary. We performed a full-scale satanic high mass, which had all these different elements of different satanic ritual, including a blessing from me to the congregation of over 100 folks that filled the theater. And that was the Center for Inquiry West in Los Angeles, which is an atheist or a promotional organization. They do lectures and plays and concerts there. And you know, we were interviewed by people globally about that, and we got the information out there, again, by doing something very dramatic. We're keeping the tradition alive that Anton LaVey started. So it hasn't gone away. We just find new ways of implementing his vision.
Hmm. All right, let's see some of the answers we've got.
I don't think
here.
Anybody can get the frickin' answer.
Yeah, I'm looking some we've got here, so I'm going to roll them off because they're kind of funny. Let's see. We got God as being the church's best friend. that's pretty good, Lee.
Actually, we should give Lee a book just for that answer.
Yeah, we got to come up with something for that one. That's pretty good. Plus, it's his birthday. And by the way, Lee is he runs our network here at Pulse Radio.
Bless
and he also runs a show. He also runs Pulse Radio, which is on what night?
No, he does Mock the Week. It's on Fridays
Mock the Week.
At 2 p.m. Pacific.
Okay. So you guys check that out, too, by the way.
Yeah. And it's his birthday today, so happy birthday, Lee.
Yeah, old fart.
Yeah, he's an old git. He's an old limey git.
Actually, he's younger than I am, so I really can't call him that.
You're just an old bastard, Ed.
Let's see. Old cranky. Best friend, Satan. That's another one.
Nobody can get the answer.
Paul, I know. Let's see. Dante. There's another one. Jesus. The Pope.
You know what? Jesus is almost right.
Yeah, it's close. We get closer. Alice Cooper. This is just getting funnier by the minute.
Lucifer.
Gates of Hell. Lucifer. Reap. Got one in there for you, Reap.
Oh, thank you. I'm flattered.
George. Okay. Now.
Someone said Satan.
That's the answer. It is.
Who said Satan?
Okay. So there you go. Satan, the ninth satanic statement.
Find it.
There we go. The ninth satanic statement.
Somebody said Oprah Winfrey. So, you know what? That's as good as Satan to me.
Who was Satan?
God, I hate that bitch.
Who said Satan?
Jeanette.
Oh.
All right.
Tossing them out there, right and left. Finally got one right.
Okay, we got to wrap it up, you guys.
All right,
as much as I hate to wrap it up, we got to. We're 10 minutes over already.
All right, Jeanette, give your info to Polly, and we'll get that out to you. All right. Got to thank you, Peter, for being with us tonight.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's been great to be here. You guys are just wonderful to talk with, and it's been stimulating and funny and a great time.
Thank you, Peter, once again. You know, from my heart, it's a good deal. Love it.
And you know you're welcome back anytime, as always.
I would love to do that.
I'll give you a call.
Yeah, we'll cover some new ground. You know, we'll talk about movies or music and just
yes, exactly, Peter. You know what? I couldn't agree more. Let's talk about other things. You know what I mean?
Something different for a change.
Yes.
Get you back
I would
on.
Love
we'll talk about
to do
something
that.
New.
Yes, we'll talk about one of the most diabolical movies of all time, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, yes, damn! That'd be great.
Do that.
That'd actually be fun.
That would be
I'll
nothing
call,
less than grand, in my opinion.
Stay on the line, and we'll wrap this up. You guys out there, tune in to do Reapso Radio this Tuesday.
Yep.
Don't forget about that.
Man, I do a lot of shows. Trying to Dread pass along next... knowledge and make people think. There's nothing wrong with that.
Hopefully, we'll have King Gerhardt on next week.
Oh, man.
If he's willing to return.
All right.
Maybe we'll talk about Chupacabra.
Why do I just feel myself biting my own tongue off?
Well, I can imagine why after the last show, but we'll
you.
See if we can get some truth about
you
that.
You know what,
one.
Peter? Come back soon, please, man.
Sure thing.
Yes,
this
please.
Could turn ugly. But anyway, guys, tune in next week. Tune in Tuesday. Thank everyone out there. Happy birthday, Lee. We love you guys. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, keep looking for the truth.
Peter, hold on 1 minute, okay?
Sure thing.
Okay, so I'm going to play a little Chris Christopherson, the Silver Tongue Devil. Paulie says, this is me. So we'll wrap up the show with this. And this has been Dread Radio. Myself, Reapso, with Ed Kraft and Peter Gilmore. Man, Peter, great conversation, my friend.
Likewise.
Yes. Tune in next Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll be on again, talking about something.
churchofsatan.com.
Yes, churchofsatan.com. Please go there and enlighten yourself a little bit. It won't hurt.
I took myself down to the Tally-Ho Tavern to buy me a bottle of beer. I sat me down by a tender young maiden whose eyes were as soft as her hair. And as I was searching from bottle to bottle for something unfoolish to say, that silver-tongued devil just slipped from the shadows and smilingly stole her away. I said, "Hey, little girl, don't you know he's the devil? He's everything that I ain't. Hiding intentions of evil under the smile of a saint. All he's good for is getting in trouble and shifting his share of the blame. And some people swear he's my double, and some even say we're the same. But the silver-tongued devil's got nothing to lose. I'll only live till I die. We take our own chances and pay our own dues, the silver-tongued devil and I." Like all the fair maidens who laid down beside him, she knew in her heart that he'd lied. And nothing that I could have said could have saved her, no matter how hard that she tried. 'Cause she'll offer her soul to the darkness and danger of something that she's never known, and open her arms at the smile of a stranger who'll love her and leave her alone. And she knows he's the devil. He's everything that I ain't. Hiding intentions of evil intentions under the smile of a saint. All he's good for is getting in trouble and shifting his share of the blame. And some people swear he's my double, and some even say we're the same. But the silver-tongued devil's got nothing to lose. I'll only live till I die. We take our own chances and pay our own dues. The silver-tongued devil and I.